So this is a mostly political channel, but I found something on Twitter that was actually quite interesting and just speaks to larger society. So we have on Twitter this man called John Roderick. John Roderick had an entire thread in which his daughter was using a can opener. So you've probably already seen this a little bit. If you haven't, basically his daughter comes to him. She says, I'm hungry. And he's like, go open the beans in the cabinet and, you know, cook them and eat them. She's 9 years old at this point. So she has a little bit of self-reliance already if he's expecting her to go cook for herself. So he's like, go open a can and cook the beans. But for some reason, she doesn't know how to use the can opener. So she's 9 years old. She's never used a can opener before. He's never taught her how to use a can opener. So he opts to take it upon himself to teach her how to use a can opener. But he's not going to teach her in the typical way. See, most parents would either do it for the kid and then hand it to him. Some of you might sit there and, you know, kind of show them how it works and then wait for them to figure it out. But he took more of a almost Socratic method when it came to teaching her how to use this can opener. And it was basically him asking her a series of questions and, you know, just working through her thought processes as she was doing it and allowing her to do a lot of trial and error. So these are some of the questions he asked her, you know, throughout this process. How do you think this works? Then he said, the little device is designed to do one thing, open cans. Study the parts, study the can, figure out what the can opener inventor was thinking when they tried to solve this problem. Then he goes on, he asks her, explain the parts. And another thing he said was, this tool was made to be pleasing, but it doesn't have any superfluous qualities. Everything that moves does so for a reason. So you can already kind of see what he's doing. He's not really giving her the answers. He's really just forcing her to think through it and to do mostly trial and error. And after about 6 hours, she opened the can of beans. Now, me as a nerd with a dad who was kind of like this, you know, kind of like a figure it out. What does this do? What do you think these things do? How do these two pieces fit together? With that type of father, for me, this was just reminiscent of me growing up. And it was actually kind of sweet. And I actually thought it was actually interesting because you don't really see this type of thinking that much when it comes to like how to teach children. But Twitter, on the other hand, was highly upset. Now, why? And before I go into why, I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't have any kids. So my perspective on this is based on the fact that I really don't have any children. I have had experience with children. I have helped raise other people's kids. But again, I always gave them back at the end of the night. I didn't have to spend, you know, every day in, day out with them. I taught for a few years, taught elementary school, taught high school. So I've been working with kids in a limited capacity. So my understanding of children is not based off of actually being a parent. Twitter's perspective on this guy was that he was being abusive. They could not for the life of them get past the fact that she said she was hungry and it took her 6 hours to figure out how to open the can. And I think they were under the belief that she wasn't eating. I'm not sure. But it was just, to me, I didn't see how they skipped over this kid learning how to do something entirely on her own. Yes, it took her a long time to do it, but she was able to learn through something on her own, you know, without any real prompting from anyone else. And I think that's indicative of the fact that as a human being in this world, you are capable of understanding a lot of things if you put in the time and you put in the effort. But for them, this was just basically child abuse. Now, their interpretation of events was that she came to him when she was hungry, apparently, and that she spent 6 hours working through a problem, and that during the 6 hours, I guess she must have been starving to death, and that, you know, he shouldn't have let her go that long without eating. And you have other people who are like, well, you're supposed to feed kids breakfast, then a snack, lunch, then a snack, dinner, and then probably an after-dinner snack. I don't know. Basically, the idea is that kids are supposed to be eating constantly throughout the day. Oh, if a person is hungry, they don't think that well. This was a power trip on his part, abuse of power. She's learning bad relationships between men and women, bad dynamics that men are in control and that she's not smart. And there was a lot going on with this thread, but it was just interesting to me how everyone took it in so many different and, in my honest opinion, screwed up directions. I do not think this man was on a power trip with his kid. If anything, he is probably more invested in her than a lot of other people are with their own children. He didn't leave her to figure it out and leave her in a room with a can opener and some beans and walk out the house. Like, if you read through the man's story, he kept saying, we were working on this problem. We were doing this. We were doing that. Like, it seemed to me that she would leave, she would come back, and then they would work through it together, and then she would probably leave, and then she would come back, and they would continue working on it together. So at no point did I get that he abandoned his child through this process. Like, there was nothing about that. He did make a statement about how they're never going to eat again until they open up this can, but Twitter took this as him threatening to starve her to death. And oh my god, how to... And I'm just like, at some point, it's just a joke. I don't think he's the type of person who's gonna actively starve his own child. Like, there's nothing in this story that is indicative of him actively starving his own kid. So I don't think it was meant to be taken seriously. And in fact, when he, you know, clarified some issues, there was a lot of little subtle little things that can be taken in a particular context if you do not know anything about the people involved. Like, you and your friends can have jokes between each other that may seem mean to other people who are looking on the outside looking in, but between you guys, you understand that there's a context, there's a history between you, so you're not taking these types of things in the same way. So I think that's pretty much what happened in this particular case, where they're looking at these interactions as if she somehow is hating her father. And I just do not get that. If anything, the fact that she kept coming back to the problem was indicative of the fact that she's probably more like her dad than anybody else. And this was a moment where they actually spent time together and probably bonded over in a weird way. So I'm not even going into the child abuse and the child neglect and all this other nonsense, because to me it's just nonsense. But what was really interesting to me is the fact that this obsession over her hunger. Now, again, I don't have any children, but in the limited experience that I've had with kids, a lot of times when they're coming to you talking about how hungry they are, they're not always hungry. Sometimes they're bored. Sometimes they just want something. They just want to eat something in particular. That's why they're hungry. And sometimes they're hungry because they didn't eat the food that you had cooked for them earlier. I had kids who were in high school who swore to me up and down that high school, that the cafeteria food was absolutely garbage. And I'm like, I remember cafeteria food. It wasn't the best, but it was edible. And it was actually funny when I went down there and I looked at the cafeteria food that they couldn't eat. They actually had fruit and vegetables and greens and stuff like that. So I'm thinking, from where I was coming from when I was growing up, we didn't have any of this shit. It was all processed. It was that cardboard flat pizza. Like, again, edible, but not great. Like, they were actually putting in an effort trying to feed you guys a more balanced and nutritional lunch, but they didn't like it. And because they didn't like it, they only liked, you know, fast food and that type of stuff, because, you know, they're teenagers. They like these high calorie, high dense foods. They were only hungry because they just did not want to eat what was given to them. I'm not entirely sure what she meant by she was hungry. And I would imagine that as her father, he had a better understanding of what her actual needs were at that time. I can't go down this route of starvation. Just because a kid says that they're hungry doesn't necessarily mean that they're actually hungry, i.e. that they actually need calories at that particular time. It's just my belief that as a society, we have a almost disconnected relationship when it comes to food. And when it comes to kids, we have this notion that the kids can't ever want, right? Nobody ever wants their kids to starve or be hungry. They always want them to be full and, you know, be well taken care of. But as human beings, we are animals on this planet like every other animal here. We have crafted a narrative in which we are supposed to eat from 8 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock at night. That is a 12-hour feeding window. And we're supposed to be eating breakfast, snacks, lunch, snacks, dinner, snacks. I don't even think we're necessarily including drinks, right? We're not including the soda that you drank. We're not including
the latte that you had, right? All of this stuff is adding up and adding up, and we're eating all the time. We're eating 12 hours a day, and we're eating all the time throughout these 12 hours. And I looked at it and I'm like, cows eat a lot, but even cows only eat for 6 hours a day. Cows have a point at which they stop eating. But human beings typically don't stop eating until we go to sleep. That is just weird. So this idea that we as human beings cannot survive without, you know, if we skip a meal that everything is going to fall apart is just absolute nonsense. It's absolute garbage. And it's part of the reason why this attitude of if you're hungry, eat, instead of analyzing, are you hungry? What are your cues actually saying? Like, we're not teaching ourselves, let alone our kids, what does hunger actually feel like? Like legitimate hunger. There are some people who know what legitimate hunger feels like, but a lot of you don't. You don't know what actual hunger feels like. And we're conditioning ourselves to just eat all the time. And because we're doing that, we have the highest rate of diabetes. We have junior diabetes that keeps growing and growing year after year. We have a bunch of overweight kids, but nobody looks at that as child abuse. A father spending time with his daughter, working on a problem and doing some problem solving, and maybe skipping a meal as a result, maybe, is abusive to us. But constantly feeding children when we shouldn't isn't abusive. And that's not to say that kids shouldn't eat, but it doesn't mean that they need to be eating all the time, because we're conditioning them to think that they need to eat all the time. And then on top of that, we don't really understand what portions are and how they relate to calories. You'll eat three cookies and you're thinking that that's 60 calories, maybe 100 calories, right? But then you look at the pack and then you realize those cookies that you've been eating are actually 300 calories. You just ate 300 calories and you're thinking it's 100 calories. Like, we don't have that idea. Like, we don't really understand portion control, portion size, and more importantly, that a lot of the foods that we're eating are very calorically dense. And while it may seem like we're not getting enough food, we actually are. Eat breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, dinner, snack. In addition to that, we're also eating more calories than we think we're eating. We're actually overfeeding a lot of our children. But nobody looks at this overfeeding as child abuse. Like, if you have a kid who is diabetic by the time they're 20, are you not responsible for child abuse? Would you not say that person is responsible for child abuse? If you have kids now who can develop type 2 diabetes by the time they're 10 years old, isn't that also child abuse? Like, as human beings, you can skip a meal and you will not die. As a human being, you do not need to eat all the time. So even in the case of this kid, he said she had a full breakfast. When I looked at my breakfast this morning and I did the calculations, because I had a pretty good sized breakfast, my breakfast, not including the syrup that I put on my pancakes, was about 1,000 calories. That was about half of the calories that I would typically need for myself for a day. I eat about 2,000 calories every day. Those are half my calories. Does that mean that I need to eat lunch? No. Assuming this kid had a full breakfast that was half of her calories for that day, which is entirely possible at that age, is skipping lunch going to kill the kid? No. The most amount of calories that kids are going to need occurs in their teenage years, and they can get up to 3,000 calories in a day for teenagers. But even eating 3,000 calories in a day doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be eating all the time, particularly if you're eating calorically dense meals. If every one of your meals is from McDonald's, that's at least 15,000 calories. That literally means that that teenager only needs to eat twice a day to get the required amount of calories that they need to take in for that entire day. Is it child abuse to have them skip lunch? No, it's not. It really isn't. You just have to make sure that they're getting an adequate amount of nutrition. And adequate amounts of nutrition doesn't mean eating all the time. We're in a society where a kid can be 15 years old going on 300 pounds of straight up fat because they're not doing sports in addition to this. They're not football players. They're not weightlifters, right? So they're 300 pounds of fat and the kid comes to you and says that they're hungry. We're not allowed to look at that kid and say, look, you need to cut back, you need to not eat, even though we all know and understand that evolution has made it so that we are to accumulate fat around our bodies for the purposes of not eating. It's very strange. The very people that are designed to withstand long and intense periods of not eating, we're telling them you need to eat all the time. And yes, I'm even including children in this, because if you're 11 years old and you're almost 200 pounds, maybe you should just stop eating. Maybe you should cut back on the calories. They're not going to die. They might feel a little bit woozy. That's what everybody kept complaining about on the Twitter feed. Oh, she was hypoglycemic. No. Hypoglycemic is an entirely different issue. A temporary drop of the blood sugar can occur from drinking a soda. You can get temporarily hypoglycemic from that. Not eating is going to cause you some minor discomfort. But after a while, after you adjust and you force yourself and you force your body to adjust to not eating, your body will make the necessary adjustments to take the calories from your fat stores, and that will keep you alive. But we're not allowed to do that. That was the food issue. Then there was this other belief and this notion that he was just supposed to, I guess, do it for her. And, you know, don't delay, you know, kind of almost instant gratification type thing. She's hungry, so you need to feed her right away. And as I'm reading on, like, this theme kept repeating, and I came across a tweet by somebody who said that they're a teacher. And she said that there's a difference between productive struggles and unproductive struggles. And as I said, I used to be a teacher too. I'm not a teacher anymore. But I had to think about that for a second, and I'm thinking, what the hell is an unproductive struggle? Because I remember hearing that too when I was, you know, studying for how to be a teacher. And I had to look it back up again because I had forgotten. So it says that an unproductive struggle is one that leads to frustration. I don't know anyone who's never dealt with frustration. We deal with frustration all the time. It's a common feeling and it's a common experience to humanity. And you have to deal with frustration because you have to learn to work through frustration. So you're telling me that if I'm frustrated because I can't get this particular thing, I can't play the scale, that's unproductive struggle. So should I just not have to deal with that? Like, I just think that that's unrealistic. And they keep going on. Unproductive struggles make learning goals feel hazy and out of reach. And I'm thinking to myself, this is long-term planning. This is the kid who's in a middle school who wants to join the NBA. That's a goal that is hazy and out of reach. Or this is the kid who's in middle school and wants to be a scientist. You know, they're dealing with middle school math, not knowing that they're going to have to get to, like, calculus 3, you know, because they want to work at NASA. Those goals feel hazy and out of reach. You're going to have these feelings. If you have a goal, you have a drive, right? You want to be NBA, you want to be in NASA, you want to do all these, you want to be a musician. You're going to deal with a goal that is hazy and out of reach just by nature. So I don't see how that's an unproductive struggle. It's just part of our own experience. And it says that unproductive struggles feel fruitless. And in this case, they might actually be correct, because you might feel like you're learning something that you're never going to use ever. And for some of you, you never do. But for some of you, it comes back to bite you in the butt. And then you're going to have to learn how to deal with it then. This is actually correct. Then it says unproductive struggles leaves students feeling abandoned and on their own. On the face of it, I get it. And I can actually understand. You do have some people who will leave a kid by themselves, not help them. And from what I was reading in that Twitter feed, you had a lot of people who felt that this had happened to them. However, just from my perspective, from what I went through, I remember when I was teaching, I would have like 20, 30 students in a class. And part of the way in which I wanted to deal with this lack of abandonment was to kind of put people in groups so that when they worked on problems, that they would be working together in a group and that they wouldn't feel so alone, right? And you try to make sure you put your groups, put some strong kids in there so that everyone can kind of help each other. At any rate, I could never get it right. Because even
let's say I got 20-some kids in a class that was a light class. It was usually 30. I would have 6 to 7 groups of kids, right? We'll say 7 groups of kids, and I have to bounce around between all 7 groups. I have to go check in with them, right? Even the kids who were doing well, I have to check in with them. You had these students who, because I was not by their side the entire time walking them through a problem, were upset with me for not doing that. In spite of the fact that they're literally 1 out of 30. I can understand feeling abandoned and that leads to an unproductive struggle, but that feeling is so personal and can be so misconstrued. I don't see how anyone has not had that feeling at some point in their lives, whether it was purposefully done, right, or not purposefully done. So I had kids who I was trying to help by setting them up in groups, but because I wasn't there at their beck and call, they would feel like they were abandoned and that they were on their own, even though they really weren't. They had other people around them. They had their classmates around them, their group mates, and they even had groups next to them around them. But they never utilized those resources. They expected me to come in. And when I really look at it, even for people who are parents, you're going to go through some of these feelings. Because one of the other feelings states that it creates a sense of inadequacy. Now, nobody wants to feel inadequate, but if you're actually trying something for the first time, of course you're going to feel inadequate because it's the first time you're doing it. It doesn't matter. If you're actually someone who enjoys learning, enjoys doing different things, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's sports, whether it's art, music, math, science, whatever it is, writing, you're going to feel inadequate the first time you do it. And like I said, even parents are going to go through these feelings. You're going to be frustrated as a parent. You're going to feel inadequate as a parent. Sometimes you're going to feel abandoned and alone. The point is that a lot of these unproductive struggles that we don't want our kids to deal with, they're going to have to deal with in some capacity, whether you want them to or not. So I don't see how it does us any good to not train them in these unproductive struggles, and I'm using quotation marks, at a younger age so that they build some type of resilience to them. Because if we don't have them go through these types of things that we know in our brain that they're going to have to deal with, are we really helping them be effective adults? I don't think we are. If anything, we're probably just making it worse. Because they're already under the belief that they're not supposed to go through any of these things. But in reality, the minute they leave the school system, yes, they are. And if we're not teaching them how to handle it in a safe environment, because school is a fairly safe environment where they're free to make mistakes and they can fix their mistakes and they can correct themselves and, you know, get better. If they're not learning it there, then you're going to force them to learn in the real world where there's real world consequences. Because you feel like your promotion is out of reach, so you just stop putting the effort at work, then you get fired. Now you got to find another job. Or again, you're sitting there and you're at work and you're frustrated with a problem, and you feel abandoned, but you never learned how to deal with problems on your own, or you never really learned how to go to other people and ask for their input to, you know, see if they can help you. Like, they're not learning a lot of these things. So this whole unproductive versus productive struggle to me is just bullshit, because productive or not, everyone goes through a struggle, and you have to learn how to deal with that in an environment in which you feel safe, in a school environment or a home environment, so that when you're on your own and you're out there in the real world and you're not in that safe cocoon anymore, you learn how to persevere and you learn how to deal with changes. You could lose your job in an instant and you're going to have a sense of inadequacy, but you never learned how to deal with that when you were a kid. So how do you deal with it as an adult? You know, I don't know. Like I said, I don't have any kids, but I'm just looking through Twitter, and it's kind of funny how we're in a world where we say we don't want to have our kids go through quote unquote unproductive struggles, despite the fact that they are going to go through unproductive struggles at various points many times throughout the entirety of their lives. We don't want them to do that while they're children. I don't know why. It's the perfect time to learn, right? We live in a world where a child skips lunch, maybe. I don't even, like I said, I don't know her schedule, but she probably skipped lunch once in a day because she was trying to figure out how to work a can opener and everyone's screaming that it was child abuse. We live in a world where
everyone's expecting him to just make sure that she eats anytime she says she's hungry, and to make sure that he just does everything for her, and, you know, she's not given an opportunity to figure anything out for herself. She's not given an opportunity to realize that she can survive without eating all the time, right? Are we really making them better people? I don't think we are. And it's kind of funny because, like it or not, we're going into a world where automation is going to become king. And a lot of this mundane routine work that we're doing isn't going to exist anymore because machines are going to be doing it for us. It may sound conspiratorial, but that's just fervently what I believe. And we're raising a bunch of kids who are being conditioned to have everything done for them at a whim at any particular time. Like, it's the perfect world for them, to be quite honest with you. An automated society is perfect for them because they're going to have all their needs taken care of at the exact time. You know, they're not going to have to think about anything, right? But at the same time, while we're raising these kids to have everything done for them and to expect to not have any type of struggle in their lives, they'll be perfect for that automated world, but they're not going to have any utility in that world either. They're not going to work because they're not going to be needed to work because they don't know how to do anything other than wait for somebody to do something else for them, wait for the machine to come. Right? All of those jobs that they could have taken, right? For the kids who needed everything explained to them, step one, step two, step three, step four. These are the kids who did perfectly well on Ford's factory line, where he had everything broken down and you screw on. All you got to do is screw on the screws on his wheel, and then you put the wheel on, and then you, you know, balance the wheel, and then, you know, the car moves down the line as we go from step one, step two, step three. But the kids, like this kid who is able, you're able to give them step one, give them step three, and they can figure out step two in between. These are the kids who are actually going to be better off in this new environment because they're going to be able to think. Like, this kid had a higher level of thinking, like I said, than most adults, right? So you're able to give her a problem, even at this age, that seems to be bigger than her, right? She's able to take that problem, she's able to break it down into these very small components, and then explain these components, and then through trial and error and just working through it, she's able to come up with a solution. Like, that's the type of thinking that is actually going to be most needed going forward in an automated society. But she's one of the few who's actually getting that education. The rest of these kids aren't. The rest of these kids are going to be sitting in the house waiting for a machine to come shove some food in their mouth. And again, conspiratorial, perhaps a little bit Mad Max, worst case scenario type stuff. But that's just what I see what we're doing. And we're saying we're doing it out of a sense of compassion and for better mental health. But your mental health is also a component of how resilient you are and how you can handle problems being thrown your way. And if you're never really given an opportunity as a kid to deal with struggles, like actual legitimate struggles, I'm not talking about productive struggles, but legitimate, these so-called unproductive struggles, if you're never allowed to be frustrated, if you're never allowed to feel alone, if you're never allowed to deal with any of that stuff, your mental health is screwed anyway. That's just how I feel. All right, I'm done.